Guys, are you looking for that extra confidence when it's time to have fun? Let me tell you about BlueChew.com. BlueChew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. BlueChew's tablets help men combat all forms of ED. BlueChew is also an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy, and it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. And the best part, all done online. BlueChew's tablets, made in the United States, and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. And here's a special deal for our listeners. Try BlueChew free when you use our promo code URBAN at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code URBAN to receive your first month free. Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Bole, and we are part of Empire Media at empiremedia.com. What's going on, fellas?
I was going to let Ray start first.
I'm good. It's just this is the time of the year for me as a casual baseball fan where we don't have a lot going on in sports. So being here to talk with you, to talk sports with you guys is amazing. And we can come up with our own topics. We can just make the summer dope because what's going on until basically NFL preseason outside of the Nationals and Orioles, which, come on now, that speaks for itself. So you guys are a big baseball fan, so maybe y'all don't agree with me, but it's good to be here for that reason.
As always, I'm blessed and I'm happy to be on this podcast talking with my brothers about sports. I actually attended the Something in the Water Festival this past weekend. it was great. Interesting. It was a great setting, man. It was great to see all those people from all over, you know, different ethnicities and, you know, various cities and states come together and just peacefully celebrate a festival of culture and music, man. It was dope.
Shout out to Pharrell. I know Wole didn't attend Mochella. He can't stand the term Mo.
I hate that. and folks were shooting up in up there too.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's terrible, man. And I actually thought about going to U Street too. I actually thought about going there. I thought about it.
Glad you didn't go.
I'm really? Glad too. Yeah, I thought about it. Mm-hmm.
What kept you from going?
Crowd. I don't like crowds, and I didn't like it. Plus, it was on. You know, I mean, it was still on. It was Juneteenth. I don't trust people anymore. To be totally honest with you, so I wasn't surprised that the crap like that went down. It sucks to say that, but so, I wasn't surprised.
I mean, what's kind of, let's go deeper into this. What's kind of taking away your trust in people? Is it like the whole handling of the pandemic, or is it just, you know, things you see on the
I'm talking about the gun
TV and being out in society.
Nah, it's a holiday. People looking for clout.
Yeah.
That's all.
That, you know, just things that happen, like in terms of crowd, you know, crowd, like without getting all into it. Folks in crowd areas, you just seems like you may be more of a
target.
Yes.
I agree because on 9/11, my kids go to school in the district. I always think about, man, is somebody going to try to pull off some type of
copycat
mass, right? Yeah. Shooting, or are they going to try to do some type of attack in order to, again, make a name for themselves or whatever the twisted thought process is? So I understand where you're coming from.
Yes, I just didn't feel like it being on June.
And they proved you right, unfortunately.
It's unfortunate, but yeah, somebody was being ignorant. So I'm not for the reasons that I thought, you know, for the reasons that I thought was the reasons why it went down, but still somebody was ignorant enough on that day. So. But did you?
Yeah, that's terrible.
I know, man. But it is what it is. I mean, it's cool. I mean, I feel like safety is good at home.
I feel you. I definitely feel you, man.
You know what I'm saying? So, but Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kine Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders insider John Kine, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. You can subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. Make sure you subscribe to The Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well.
And of course, our show, The Urban Sports Scene, can be found on Podcast DC, which is the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health all across the DMV region. Go ahead and download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows and, of course, other great content.
Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, Sports Bloggers, Sport Podcasters, and Sports Debates. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about Washington Wizards guard Bradley Beal making his decision about his future with the Wizards. At 8:20, we'll talk about the Warriors winning the NBA Finals. Finally, in our segment HBCU Corner, we have a pre-taped interview with MEAC Commissioner Sonya O. Steeles.
Yes, sir. I want to encourage people to check out, of course, Chase Hughes on Twitter. Chase Hughes was a guest on our show, Wizards Insider for NBC Sports Washington. And I'm going to quote his Twitter page, and it says this. Wizards President Tommy Shepard is addressing the media right now, says he feels Bradley Beal is much closer to the player he was 2 years ago than he was last season. Also, quote, we have no problem playing Bradley Beal at point guard. Which leads into our first segment, because Brad Beal, of course, said that he has made his mind up regarding his decision to sign a 5-year deal worth a reported $250 million with the Washington Wizards, or opt out and go elsewhere. But, of course, he's not going to announce it yet. Do you really expect Bradley Beal not to sign here based on all that we know in addition to what I just read, which were the words of Tommy Shepard? Will T.?
No, I fully expect him to sign here at the bare minimum. Now, you know, whether he decides to stay here and fulfill that 5-year, $250 million obligation in D.C., that's a totally different story. I know that as recently as yesterday, he's come out and he's pretty much said that he wants to be the Dirk Nowitzki of the Washington Wizards, which I think that it's a noble aspiration. But I think the difference between him and Dirk is Dirk had an organization that proved at one point during his career they could at least build a championship, at least get to an NBA championship, right? And that's when, you know, that initial loss against the Miami Heat, I believe that was around 2000, I want to say circa 2006 or something like that, or 2005. This team hasn't shown that, you know, from an organizational standpoint, that they can put in the right infrastructure to surround him with a team talented enough to even get past the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah, it's wild. A lot of people on social media, especially on IG, they basically think that Brad isn't coming back. The homie Dujanay on IG said no. You have Mike Knotts says no, he's going to Philly. On IG, my man Austin says no. Lakers, Heat, or Rockets are cool fits for Bradley Beal. There's a whole bunch of them, but that's just to name a few. I think Brad's taking the money. It's 250. I mean, I think he's been doing a lot of over the years. He's done a lot of, I'm gonna say, complaining, but a lot of politic and to make sure he's getting to this point where he can get the max deal. Like, he wanted to be all NBA and this, that, and the other so he can qualify. He's been talking about it and saying he was ripped a couple years ago and why he wouldn't make him eligible to be all NBA. So he's now at the point where he can be supermax, get 250. All this it's here for him. So I think he wants the money. I think to a point, I think he does want to be in a situation where he is the guy. All these other situations where, you know, Bradley Beal has been linked to, would he be the number one? No, he would be the number two. So it goes against what he's been talking about through the last couple of years that he preferred to be in Washington. He wants to be the guy that leads the charge, not the guy to be the Robin. He wants to be the Batman. So if he wanted to go any other location, if he wants to win a chip, he can't be the number one. So at least here, he's recognized as the number one. And this whole organization is willing to do whatever it takes to keep him here and whatever it takes to build around him.
We're all naturally competitors. And I'm going to give two hot takes. And the reason why I mention us being competitors is because it just is a validation that Bradley Beal is also a competitor, right? Mm-hmm. He often talks about guys that played for me in St. Louis. Two of the biggest names being Darius Garland and who else? Jason Tatum. Mm-hmm. Jason Tatum just led the Boston Celtics, a historic franchise, to the NBA Finals and was two games away from winning it as the lead dog. That had to give Brad an incentive to say, you know what, I want to do this on my own in D.C. If this young dude who I brought along can do it, so can I. He was also, Jason Tatum being, was also first team All-NBA. Yeah. He's achieving all of the goals that Brad has sought out to achieve. And again, not to try to necessarily compare the two because they're different players, of course. Yeah. But I'm just saying, if it's like if I take you to the gym with me, Wole, which I did, and you start to get ahead of me in terms of how much you lift and how far you can run, I'm like, oh, I got to step my game up because this is the person I brought in. I'm seeing him surpass me. So I feel like that's one aspect. However, if Bradley Beal is going to leave, I believe it's for South Beach. Juwan Howard was in a similar situation. That's the last big free agent that we were anticipating. Is he going to sign in Washington? Where did he sign? Miami. Now, we already know what happened with that, and he ends up back in Washington. Turned out to be a huge regret for the franchise. But regardless, Juwan Howard chose Miami for multiple reasons. LeBron James chose Miami. Miami is a great destination. If you're a free agent, you can get money. It's a beautiful scenery for your family. And from what I hear, it's also, from a cultural standpoint, a good landing spot for many NBA players, of course, who are African-American. So if he's going to leave, it's going to be for the Heat. The Heat were close enough to beating who Celtics? Jason Tatum Celtics this year came within a few seconds away from advancing to another NBA Finals. If he's going to leave, that's where he's going to go. However, if he's a real competitor like we all are, he's going to stay in Washington. He's going to try to duplicate what Jason Tatum is doing in Boston.
Will, you got anything you want to say about that?
I'll just say this. It's okay. You made very valid points, Ray, but I'll say this.
You say that so
there
much.
There comes
bro.
A point. There comes a
you
point
made
where.
Points, but.
Because you did. There comes a point that, yes, you're a competitor, and yes, you think that you will be the guy that put this to elevate this franchise to another level. But at a certain point, you know, after Bradley Beal signs this contract and he knows he'd be guaranteed $250 million, and you haven't won in the same organization for 10 plus years, there comes a self-realization that, hey, I just can't get it done on my own here as the lead dog, you know, as the only dog in the doghouse. And this organization can't or hasn't shown the ability to provide me with the stars needed to help me elevate this franchise. I have to decide to leave. So, and as you said, you know, Miami's a great option, but, you know, there are also other options. I don't necessarily think Philadelphia would be one, but I do think, you know, organizations such as, I don't know, maybe the, you know, no, nah, I wouldn't
it's
say
It's only
Minnesota.
Brooklyn and the Heat and my eyes. The Lakers is a graveyard right now.
The Lakers can't really get him. There's no.
I know, unless we get Russ back here in Washington.
Yeah, that's not
happening. And I say we, meaning in the DMV. Yeah. I'm not saying we, the Wizards. Can I go back to something you said earlier, though, Will?
Yeah, go ahead.
You said he possibly will resign, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to stay. And it reminds me of Kevin Garnett. Remember Kevin Garnett re-upped with Minnesota, but ultimately he decided to leave later on to get that title he so heavily coveted. I see a similar scenario with Bradley Beal being a guy who wants to be loyal to the D.C. area, be loyal to a franchise a la Kevin Garnett, but he also wants to win the title. It's certain guys, kind of like Kobe, Jason Tatum has that makeup where Jason Tatum doesn't look happy to be in the offseason right now after he lost the NBA Finals. There's some guys the very next day, they got shades on, they got their girl, they on their way to Cabo. They're loving the NBA lifestyle. They're not at all sad that we didn't win. They're not back in the gym right away. And you have to take a vacation. Don't get it twisted. But I'm just saying, Bradley Beal, he has that in his DNA to where he wants to win. So I think eventually he'll leave. Now, it may not be to the degree of Kobe, or Jason Tatum maybe, but because you give me a face, well, but I believe he has that drive to win basketball games. He's gotten better every season. Every year he gets better.
I think he's an individual player. I don't think he's got the drive. I think there's different levels.
Team success?
To it. Yeah, I think there's different levels to it. I think he wants to be the guy. Like, I think Jason Tatum, which I'm going to give him credit, is that Jason Tatum took, like, if you look through that season and then to the second part of the season when they turned it on, he took on more role of being do whatever it takes to win the basketball game. Like, so I'm not going to just jack up shots. I'm going to now get players involved. He changed his game to win games. He played defense.
Strong leadership. Strong leadership. Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
But I think what we failed to put into context is Jason Tatum also has Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
He also had Robert Williams III. He also had Al Horford. When you Bradley Beal, and to his credit, Bradley Beal has become a lot better at being the facilitator and running the offense and creating offense for himself and others off the dribble. Who else does he have? I mean, when you look at the options Kristaps Porzingis, look at the options of Kristaps Porzingis and you look at Kyle Kuzma, no knock against either one of those guys, but they aren't enough. I'll say this. Historically, they have not shown enough to be the pieces that will you a championship squad.
This is the thing, though. See, I think this is my issue, then. I think people overvalue Bradley Beal, then, because he's not that guy. Like, Jason Tatum, to me, is a different talent. He is. He's a two-way player. He's a different talent. Bradley Beal's a good scorer. He's a guy who worked to be a scorer. He worked on his game in terms of the NBA game, on his patent, everything. Jason Tatum has physical size, youth, skill. He has a lot to his bag that makes him that type of player. I agree with you, Will. Like, we all are out here. We tout the whole Jaylen Brown. If Jason Tatum had Jaylen Brown's dog, he would be like that. He'd be that thorough of a basketball player. But also on the flip side is when we look at Bradley Beal, like, he has opportunities to uplift the team. It's like, what do we rank Bradley Beal as a player? Like, we're about to give him $250 million. Like, seriously, real talk.
Okay,
we're going to give Bradley Beal $250 million to be, but on every other roster, for real, like, name every other roster. Can you win a championship with Bradley Beal? Be real.
That's a legitimate point. I'm not going to say that's fair as Ray has been saying that I say too much. That's a legitimate point. But
you only said it to me.
But in the context of elite scoring talent in the NBA who can create shots for himself and others.
Okay.
Yes, Bradley Beal may not be a superstar, right? A guy that you put on a team, and that team, you could pencil him in for 40 wins.
Mm-hmm.
But what he is he's an elite scoring wing talent. Those type of guys, they're very few. If we think, I mean, let's just be honest and let's look at if we go through the lines of the best two guards in the NBA, James Harden isn't who he used to be.
Yeah.
Anthony Edwards is definitely on the upspring. You got Bradley Beal. Jimmy Butler plays the three.
Devin Booker. Zach LaVine. Okay, you got Devin Booker. You can put Zach LaVine.
Zach LaVine and Bradley Beal, those guys essentially they're similar in talent. I mean, they're similar from a game perspective of what they produce.
Mm-hmm.
But, Bradley Beal, he does something that is very hard to replicate, and that is be an efficient three-point shooter. And we know the premium that the league puts on that. On that skill set right now.
His three-point ball this season has been low this year. But I, you're right. He's a shooter. He can shoot. Like, he had a good J. I'm not going to discount his jumper. But I will say this about Bradley Beal. Like, we see scorers. Like, there are scorers in the NBA. There are a lot of guys who can score the basketball, period. But at the end of the day, it's just a stat. It's not a winning stat. Because everybody trashes James Harden. They do. They trash him. But James Harden has, and to be honest with you, we talk about lesser talent. James Harden, before Chris Paul, has had some lesser talented teams in Houston and has taken that team to the postseason within the Western Conference as a two guard, right? Everybody craps on James Harden in terms of in the postseason how he produces, but he has taken teams with Eric Gordon as a six man, and who's the – they had a – there's a stretch – a stretch four they used to have on their team too, but took them to the postseason. It's a white dude. I can't even think of his name. But they used to
Ryan Anderson.
Thank you, bro. Ryan Anderson. Thank you, Ryan Anderson, and took that team to the postseason. All I'm saying is, like, Bradley Beal as a scorer, yeah, he could score. But we all know, we all watch basketball. We know what basketball is. You just can't score the basketball. There's so much more you have to do. And I'm not saying that he doesn't get better every year, because Ray's right. He does get better every year. He does. But at the same time, how does that equal wins? There are guys in this league who score the basketball at a high clip but don't win games. Devin Booker, who we all like, needed a Chris Paul or whatever to win games. So what is Bradley Beal for real as a – because we're talking about $250 million. Like, this is what we're talking about. We talk about Otto Porter being overpaid for being a third player. But at the end of the day, like, $250 million to me is for superstars. Those are dudes who carry and move oceans. Like, those are $250 million. Steph Curry is $250 million+. Bradley Beal is what? Like, he scores the basketball because Bradley leaves someone else to score.
One of the things you're failing to take into consideration is when you talk about James Harden is, one, there was a system designed to take care of it, designed to accentuate his best talents. That's one. And two, they also put players around James Harden that complemented him and helped create that to play into that sense of philosophy that they coveted so much in Houston. And that's what I'm saying. Thus far in Bradley Beal's career, this organization hasn't shown that they are able to do those two things. I'm not going to say that Bradley Beal can be James Harden at his MVP peak.
Yeah.
But what I will say is, does Bradley Beal trust this organization to do for him from a coaching perspective and from a front office perspective what Houston did for James Harden?
I'll say this. Bradley Beal should trust his organization because they did what they needed to do so he can get the spotlight. Like, he won the spotlight. They got rid of the dude that had the spotlight for him. Like, they put players who, to be honest with you, who allowed him to do what he needed to do just to grow his game. He wanted to go one-on-one with the rest of the league. He wanted to get the shots. Like, you can see it. There are games prior where he'll dribble around just to get a shot off. He has ultimate freedom. He wanted this. Like, I think this situation has been posted for him. To me, this situation is built like for him.
We'll see. Like I said, I fully expect him to sign the 5-year contract, $250 million, because you would be a fool not to.
I know, right?
It's just a bad business decision. But I don't expect him to fulfill those 5 years and $250 million in Washington, D.C.
I feel you, man. All right, man. We talked about Bradley Beal enough. We'll talk about the Warriors winning the NBA Finals after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Team.
For ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces on Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com.
Guys, are you looking for that extra confidence when it's time to have fun? Let me tell you about BlueChew.com. BlueChew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. BlueChew's tablets help men combat all forms of ED. BlueChew is also an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy, and it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. And the best part, all done online. Blue Chew's tablets, made in the United States, and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. And here's a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code URBAN at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code URBAN to receive your first month free.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray, and myself, Wole, part of Empire Media at AmpireMedia.com. All right, last week, the Golden State Warriors beat the Boston Celtics in Game 6 of the NBA Finals, 103-90, to become the NBA champs. Steph Curry was Finals MVP. Will T, thoughts on the Warriors winning it all, since you predicted it, right?
I mean, yeah, I did predict it. I mean, thank you for coming to me first, because I was the one who predicted it. I actually went back and listened to our original show when we were predicting it, and I actually did say Golden State in six.
Okay.
But once Boston won, I flaked, and then I went to Golden State in seven. So technically, I did nail it.
I didn't say I lost confidence per se.
I'm just saying that I made a rash decision based on the information that was presented to me. I mean, we all do these things.
We all do, right?
You know?
We all do, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, I still hold the title as Will Stradamus.
Oh, God. Here we go.
So, I just want to put that out there.
Jesus,
but,
take the wheel.
It was a good series. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those series where it kind of tapped into the general public, people who aren't diehard sports fans or NBA fans. You know, they took notice because of the two franchises that were included. Mm-hmm. We all know the history of the Boston Celtics, and you have this Warriors team who, over the past 10 years, has been one of the more popular teams in the NBA and has continued to kind of grow their legacy as being a team for the, I don't know, for the late 2010, late 2010s through the early 2020s. Steph Curry deserved to win that title. He did a fantastic job. You know, he had one of the things that people mostly look for when giving a finals MVP is they want that a guy to have like that game where he puts the team on his back.
Yeah.
And you know, that 43 point game that he had, I believe. Go ahead.
That was it. You're right. That was it.
Yeah, that was it. And then the way he responded in game six, the closeout game, you know, Wiggins had a good game, but he didn't have as strong as a game as Steph.
Mm-hmm.
So that really clinched the finals MVP put to him. So shout out to him. And I love the way that these guys are being extra petty and pulling up all those receipts of everything people have said about them. I love it.
It helps the league because I don't like the culture today. Like Draymond Green had Jason Tatum on his podcast just a few months ago, and now you're walking close to him to the sideline like you're trying to be sort of a bully, even though you're just trying to be like annoying. But still, it's not the same competitive nature, although we know the stories of Jordan playing golf with Danny Ainge and all. So maybe some of the stuff has been around for a while, but it just seems like today's jovial nature doesn't vibe well with some of the fans who remember the older days of the NBA. Anyway, but to talk about the NBA Finals, one thing is on multiple platforms, I said the winner of the NBA championship this year was going to be between Phoenix and Golden State. I said whoever's coming out the West is going to win it. But I loved what Boston was doing because they built this from the ground up. They have two cornerstones along with Marcus Smart and bringing back Horford. I love what they were doing. So I rode with Boston in the finals. I changed my mind and I don't regret it. It's just turnovers did them in and fatigue. It's so amazing to watch Jason Tatum tire out because he's played so much basketball, if you include USA basketball as well, just over the course of the past 2 years. And then you watch Steph Curry just I know he's had injuries. He had to sit out some. They missed the playoffs. Well, they made the play-in game. Does that count? But still, when you watch the teams like Golden State make these long runs continuously, when you watch guys like LeBron James continuously make runs through the playoffs, it just, again, speaks to the level of conditioning that these guys are in. And Boston now, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, is going to step it up to another gear. I remember, Will, we had a discussion years ago. You were like, the AAU grind, it prepares people for the NBA. But I'm telling you, these long postseason runs are hard to sustain, especially when you're the lead dog. So fatigue definitely caught up, but the turnovers did them in. I said last week and the week before that, you can't turn the ball over against Golden State. They turn it into points, and they can hit you so hard. And that's the problem with what Boston did. They kept turning the ball over. I don't understand why there were no adjustments to prevent the amount of turnovers. We're talking about 23 in a crucial closeout game. Just unacceptable.
So my take on the series is that, you know, a team always has an opportunity to change the series. Steph, you know, had an opportunity to change the series in game four, right, Will? When you talk about hit 40, right? So he changed the series and the momentum. But there's also, if I'm a Celtics player, you look at an opportunity in game five. Steph has a bad game. It's not a good game. It was not a good game. Steph is off. You had this dude has been dominant for most of this series, but that game five he was off. You had an opportunity in that fourth quarter to make a, to take advantage of it and win the game in Golden State. You had this opportunity, and your start your best players were turning the basketball over, making bad decisions, missing shots, and that's when you're on the road. And we all know this. I'm not going to put it on the road on the role players because that's easy, right? Role players are supposed to play well at home. On the road, your dogs need to show up. And an opportunity when Steph had a bad game, you had to take advantage of it. You had to, and you didn't. So to me, I like even thinking about that, watching that game, I was like, you know what? They go back to Boston. I don't know. I wouldn't be that confident for Boston because in back of my mind, I was like, because I picked the Celtics, I was like, yeah, Celtics. You know, I was like, Celtics. They got a good chance. They still have a chance to win it. But in my back of my mind, in terms of knowing basketball, when their best player, the MVP of the series, has that bad game, you got to take advantage of it. That's like, I'll go back and be as a youngster. Like, if Jordan was off and the team still lost, like Bulls still beat a team, if Jordan was off in the playoffs, mm-hmm. in that game, and the Bulls still beat you, you knew it was over. Like, yeah. You knew it was over. Like, because you got to take advantage of that game. Because Steph averaged, what, 30-plus in the series? He averaged 30-plus in the series. So you had an opportunity. He didn't make a single three. And it wasn't like Klay was Klay. Klay wasn't great. He was okay. But that was more of a team effort. Wiggins, you know, all of them played their role. But when Steph doesn't play his game, you had to take advantage of that. And once you lost that, to me, I was like, he's going to play better in game six. So you're going to get good Steph in game six, man. He ain't going to be off. And if you can't beat that, then, you know, it looks kind of shaky.
So, I mean, that having known that, would you have changed your prediction?
What? If having known what? Like in game five?
Yeah, no, I mean, no, because look, we you know, like the way game five played out, right? We had the show before game five, right?
It was before game five. It was before game five. No, you're right. Yeah. I said it was over. No, it was after. But remember how it was after game five?
It was after game five.
And remember what I said,
though? We all thought it was going seven, though.
But yeah, but even remember what I said, though? I was saying a bunch of ifs, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't even confident after that on that show. I wasn't even confident. I was like, you know what? If they were supposed to win, I said Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, they have to be a dynamic duo. They have to have their best game in game six. I ain't say they was going to. I said they had to. I said Steph was going to be better. Yeah. I told you Steph was going to be better. I said Steph was going to be better.
Yeah, just to you were correct, Wole. He averaged 31.2 points during the NBA finals.
So I'm saying, like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, go ahead. I mean, look, I mean, hindsight is always 20/20. You know, I mean, Wole, you know, after game five, if you had a called it, you know, you would be right, but you didn't. So.
Hey, I'm just saying, man. Congrats to Steph, man. Congrats to him. But we want to ask another question. Let's get into it because we got to hurry to show up anyway. This trio of Steph, Draymond, Klay, they have four championships. Where do you rank this one out of the four? Will, I'm going to start with you.
I think this was the best one out of the four. Just because that first one, when they were 67-15, everyone kind of, you know, as we approached the playoffs, everyone knew that this was a historic team, right? This year, then you have the two with KD. Let's just be honest, like, everyone knew that they were the best team in the league with those two with KD, even the one that they lost against Toronto. But this was kind of unexpected. And because of the work that all three of them put in to come back from injury and get this one, with a relatively younger, some younger pieces around them, this was their best championship run to me.
Right.
I'm going to go with the first one, actually. I don't think this one was the most impressive. I admire what Klay overcame to get to this point. But the first one, I feel, is when, honestly, Steph and Draymond announced to the world that we've arrived. Draymond balled that year. He was hitting his open threes. He was actually a threat offensively more than he is now. I respect his role on the team, but I just felt like then he just played with this confidence that currently from an offensive standpoint he doesn't have. I think he's cool with the role he plays, and he said himself, I can be a superstar without having to score a lot of points. But this one, we knew they were going to be competitive. We knew they had the band back together, and they had so many young pieces. They had Kuminga. And Weissman didn't even play.
They ain't play him
all, I'm just
right.
saying. And then you had Jordan Poole. You had just a lot of just talent on the team that in that first year when they
Moody
went up against
too.
LeBron.
And they
got Moody. That's what I'm saying. And they didn't even play him. That's what I'm saying. This team is stacked. So I knew they were going to be competitive because remember, when Steph went out, they had their stretches with and without Steph where they didn't play well and they lost games. I mean, that's going to happen during a long season. But the young guys played well. Again, Jordan Poole, Kuminga, Moody, these guys stepped in and played well. Like I said, Wiseman didn't even play. So
Otto Porter
played well. I mean, that's the perfect system for him, if you ask me.
It is, man. Shout out to Otto Porter, man.
They played awesome brand of basketball all season with the pieces they had. So while this one was dope, and I'm sure it might be the most fulfilling for these guys, especially with Steph capping it off with the finals MVP, for me personally, I believe the first one was the sweetest one for them.
On Twitter, all nerd, everything. That's what's up, man. He said second. He has this as the second.
Okay.
He ranks as the second. He has the first one as the
Of course,
the one.
Man. We always right over here. That's fair, but let me say this.
Stop it. the homie Cameron said it's a toss-up between the first in 2015 and this year.
Okay. He's going to be the mediator between Will and I.
Yeah, he's the mediator. You guys are – you know what? It's what I'm going to go – actually, I'm going to probably agree with Will. I'm going to say this may be it. Just because of what you mentioned, like Steph getting the MVP, and you know, it's hard. This one's hard because they don't go against a LeBron. Like they're going against guys who haven't been there before. So I don't know if it's harder because that the mentality.
When Ja got hurt. It's just I mean,
it's harder because it's. I don't know how to explain because this one is they're not. They're going against. I think they're going against a better. Okay, so
team?
A better team.
Sure.
Right. So in terms of victories,
absolutely,
they're going against
absolutely.
A better team. But it's also a thing, though, and I think we all can agree, man, when you got that guy that's intimidating, it does strike fear to a point it changes your whole game plan. You know what I'm saying? And like in this game, because you mentioned, like LeBron isn't turning the ball over 100 times,
nope.
right? He's not beating himself.
Nope.
But in this situation, you got young dudes who are going to beat themselves. So it's hard. Like I do say in terms of Boston as a complete team, then I can see that. I'm in between.
LeBron,
I ain't gonna lie to y'all,
LeBron
bro. I'm in between.
Is a totally different beast. We're talking about.
I'm in between.
In that finals, Kyrie was hurt. Matthew Dellavedova was the starting point guard.
Yeah.
Iman Shumpert. And LeBron had them boys up 2-1 in that finals.
So it's harder. It's definitely. It's a tough one. I think I can see arguments on both sides, to be real with you, dog.
It's no wrong
both
answer.
Sides, you know what I'm saying? Because when I look at it, I'm like, Boston's a better team. Like, and I got young dudes who hungry. But also, they're not seeing a LeBron. Like they're not seeing that type of monster. They're not seeing like just like they didn't see Kawhi. You know what I mean? Like they lost to Kawhi. You get what I'm saying? Like they lost to Kawhi. They're not seeing dudes like that.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's hard. Like I think this is definitely fulfilling because you got Steph. Steph went and getting his first MVP and playing well in the finals. You had like you mentioned, all these dudes were out. Klay was out. Steph was out for some time. Draymond was out for some time. Over the last couple seasons. And now they're all together and they ran it back. You know what I mean? So I guess you could. For them, it probably feels like it's the best one. And also, I want to shout out to, like, y'all need to leave Kevin Durant alone. Why y'all mentioning Kevin Durant? They won a championship.
Draymond mentions him a lot. He does. He said like, even when KD was here, Steph was the guy. That type of stuff.
Yeah.
It's not even shots, though. He's just feeling like he's speaking facts on this guy. He's advocating for Steph. But at the same time, it brings KD into discussions that I feel like right now he doesn't even need to be
He'll
part
need
of.
To be in, that's what I'm saying. Right, Will? You agree with that, Will? Why is KD even
I don't understand. I understand why people are trying to kind of bring KD into this because – Look, KD has been a troll over the past couple of years, and people for some reason just hate him for a reason that I can't ascertain, for lack of a better word. But this should all be about, you know, Golden State. We should be celebrating Steph, Klay, and Draymond, this accomplishment, getting 4 titles, and also Steve Kerr.
Well, as I said to start the show, the NBA season is over, and so is my sports year right now. But the show must go on. As that used to be. Well, no, it's still our theme song is still the show must go on.
Right?
We got to get
the
thing moving. But the show does go on.
Yeah, we got to get a new one.
And as part of our HBCU Corner segment, we'll play our interview with MEAC Commissioner Sonia O. Stills after the break. You're listening to Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
For ages.
All right. You dig. I'll do you dig.
Deuces. On Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com.
Guys, are you looking for that extra confidence when it's time to have fun? Let me tell you about BlueChew.com. BlueChew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. BlueChew's tablets help men combat all forms of ED. BlueChew is also an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy, and it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. And the best part, all done online. Blue Chew's tablets, made in the United States, and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. And here's a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code URBAN at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code URBAN to receive your first month free.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole and Ray, part of Empire Media at empiremedia.com. It's time for HBCU Corner. We have a treat for you. Right now, we have the commissioner of the Mid-Eastern Atlantic Conference, y'all know it as the MEAC, Ms. Sonia Stills. Hello, Commissioner Stills, and welcome to the Urban Sports Scene.
Well, hey, Ray, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. But we are the Mid-Eastern Athletic
Conference. I'm sorry, I'm used to saying, I'm sorry.
Did I not hear that right, or have I been saying it wrong?
I'm so sorry. Mid-Atlantic is a bank.
You know,
we went to University of Maryland Eastern Shore. I should know this.
You should know. it's stage fright. You already know what it is.
Yeah, you know what it is.
Maybe we are so happy to have you.
I know. You know, make people nervous. So yeah, I'm good.
It's all good, though. Like I said, we're happy to have you. We've had many guests as part of our HBCU Corner segment, and we always like to have a little fun when we get started. And we ask about homecomings. You went to Hampton for graduate school, correct?
For graduate school, yes.
Okay. So, and you're currently, of course, the commissioner of the MEAC.
Yep.
So who has the best homecoming, in your opinion?
Oh, shoot. I got to be neutral. I'm neutral.
you know you got two dudes who went to Eastern Shore now. Like, come on.
You went to UMS. Just keep that in mind.
I mean, Low, let me tell you this, though. I'm going to tell you two things. Okay. One, UMS is like, and I tell this, I swear I just said that last week again, is my favorite place to visit. It's a beautiful campus.
Campus, yes.
It is so peaceful. Uh-huh. It is, I love it. And uh-huh. And then here's the thing, because you have Soul Food Thursday and Seafood Friday.
It's still there.
It's still there, yes.
Look.
I got to tell my wife that.
Every time they say, you know, you need to come on campus, I make sure it's on a Thursday or a Friday because it is the best. I promise you, I'm telling the truth. I love UMS. That is
still got the turkey wings on Soul Food Thursday because that's what we used to get all the time. Yeah. Used to get the turkey wings and the gravy. Yeah.
Look, it was the first time I had the salmon cakes for the first time was at UMS. I'm so in love. So in love.
That's why Wole gained weight during college.
This is so true. I did. I had a lot of weight during college.
Because I went to Old Dominion, a predominantly white institution. And so, you know, it's a culture shock, you know, when you go to an HBCU. And I remember freshman year at ODU. At the time, Norfolk State didn't have a football field and used to play on ODU's campus. Uh-huh. And they played Hampton and Norfolk State played. And me and my girlfriend dressed up in blue and white just so we could pretend that we were walking with them as part of the HBCU. But it's an awesome, awesome different culture of homecoming, you know, mm-hmm. the way you dress. you know, you can't, you know, you just be going throwing on something. No, at HBCU, you got to be dressed to the nines. And I never understood that, you know, the working folks, you know, especially, you know, the cheerleading coaches, it's like, aren't you working? Why do you have heels on walking? And it's just all that different stuff. The bands, it's mm-hmm. like, it's such a different homecoming, family-oriented type of feeling, and everybody is having the best time. It's wonderful. So, yes, love H. I'm not going to say which one, but I love HBCU homecoming.
We appreciate that. So you show love to UMES. Wole, we already know we love Hampton's homecoming.
Hampton's homecoming is amazing. Love Hampton's homecoming.
UMES used to have the spring homecoming, which made ours unique. That's why we felt like ours is up there in the discussion. But Hampton has an awesome
amazing homecoming. I remember the first time I went to Hampton's homecoming. It was a shock. I wanted to stay.
Now I've went to when I go to the football games in the past, I've been to Morgan's and I was like, oh my God, just the cars. I mean, it was like, oh my God, unique. Florida A&M, I off the chain. Everybody has their own unique different thing.
They do.
But it, I mean, the only one, oh man, that was at South Carolina State. Man, I don't even, are y'all Greek?
No, we're not Greek.
Let me say, I'm a Delta. And
My sister's a Delta.
Delta, okay.
My sister's a Delta.
So I'm sure she knows about the Omega Oil. So, you know.
Can't do it, man. You're not supposed to do it. You're not, no. He don't know.
Some of my best friends are campus, I guess. So. But anyways. Oh, you were trying to do a pyramid?
He was.
I was getting close.
You were trying to do the rock.
I only held it up halfway.
Yeah, I see. Because I swear I thought you were a Kappa. That was a diamond.
Oh, now see, you being stereotypical now. You thought I was a Kappa.
Because
they don't want to be exactly. So we both exchanged pleasantries on that one. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The campers, I mean, the RVs, I mean, it was tremendous. And then Central is, so everybody has something that's unique and different to them. Uh-huh. And it makes it special. It makes it special. It seems that everybody's having a great time, which is awesome. You always feel at home no matter where you go. And I love that.
Well, we're from DC, so you got to come to Howard. Just let you know.
That's the one place I have not been on homecoming.
Really?
Mm-mm. And you know, back in my day, I'm not going to say, back in my day, that was the place to be. Later in my life, you know, it was A&T, GoHo.
Oh.
G-ho,
and I don't think I've been to GoHo either. So.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about ANCs. I might have to come out there one of these days. We're gonna we'll do our tour.
Yeah, we should do a tour. So we talk about homecoming enough. We should do a tour. Yeah. This is true. So I mean, obviously, like there's a bunch of popular sports within the MEAC Athletic Conference. So there's a bunch of, you know, popular sports teams. What is your favorite sport?
Oh my gosh. Probably football. I like it when, of course, when I'm at conference games, you're neutral. So you can't, you know, be out there cheering, you know, sometimes,
of course,
you know, I forget, you know, I always be for the underdog, you know, all excited, like, oh, and then you got to calm down. But I think football, just because I like the atmosphere.
Got it.
I like the atmosphere of it. And it's more than just a game. It's like an event. Uh-huh. You know? So I think I like that a lot. And then I probably, my second one would be bowling.
Okay.
Because who would think?
Yes,
that's you. Bowling, right? Bowling team. We have a good bowling team.
Championships that we have with bowling, and yes, the fact that we were one of the first conferences that started bowling, and we are one of the top conferences in it. And so we have like five teams that are nationally ranked currently. And three national championships. So with UMES leading the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, yeah, our bowling squad. Well, Ray, when we just
they were good when we were there. They were good.
And they were born. Isn't that when we were about to leave though?
My senior year, they won a national championship, 2003.
Yeah,
definitely.
So yeah,
my senior year.
Don't do that. I know what you meant by that. Don't do that. Don't throw shade. Don't do that to me.
So you were still there during the
we got there the same time. But I know what you're trying to do there. I know exactly what you were trying to do there.
Yeah, that was Coach Sharon Brumell. She brought it home. Yeah, such great talent. So.
All right, we can go right into like the, you know, the serious part of the interview. Okay. Okay? The now all the right. serious part.
I'll try.
All right. So on January 1st, you became the MEAC commissioner, becoming the first female commissioner in the conference history, as well as the first commissioner of Division I HBCU conferences. What does this achievement mean to you?
It means a lot. You know, I never would have thought I would be in this position. And honestly, if you asked me years ago and people had asked me years ago, I would have said, absolutely not. You know, who wants 11 bosses? I have enough with one boss dealing with that. And I just wanted to, just my whole career is just focusing on the job at hand and staying centered where my feet were, you know, and not looking too much ahead. Just thought I'd just planned on hopefully retiring in the MEAC and I could be the secretary. I could care less. You know, I just wanted to focus on doing the work. And so, but Dr. Thomas could care less of what I wanted. He continued to, you know, shape me and mentor me and challenge me. And that's the main thing, challenge me constantly with challenges. And this is just another challenge. And I could see, you know, being here 19 years, could see where the conference can go and having a separate vision from him and then having that opportunity to make it come to life. So I'm thrilled, you know, I'm excited, I'm, you know, a little nervous, anxious, but, you know, it's tremendous to be able to have a vision and you have people who buy into that and that we can go there together.
And speaking of vision, you do have a vision in terms of which is to me is original about esports. You have a vision of an esports initiative. Can you talk about that as well in terms of what you hope that this can do for the MEAC?
Yeah. So, you know, when we got into esports, it was during, of course, with COVID, you know, and what we wanted to do was find another revenue stream, and it didn't evolve that way. And so the president actually wanted esports to be a conference initiative. And so from there, it's like, okay, you know, we want it to be where esports majors and, you know, classes would come out of that. And then what we did was build an esports community, you know, that had or continue to have representatives from each of the campuses that serve on this committee and to help build where we're going. So it started out just getting students aware that esports is on the campus that you can play as a team. So it's taking a casual player and turning them into a team player that doesn't want to play for money, but want to play for the win. And so that has been one of the greatest challenges, which is nothing unique than any other conference that's trying to start esports. But we have evolved into this past year having two conference seasons, you know, in the spring and the fall, with Howard winning both seasons and Morgan State right against their heels and, you know, giving out trophies. It's like you could not envision that where we started to where we are now. You got these teams, everybody has their own jerseys, you know, so they look like a team. And we want to become a varsity esports HBCU varsity esports conference. So that's where we're moving. So, awesome. You know, we have out of the eight institutions, five of them have esports labs, three we're trying to work to have them so that everybody's on an equal playing field. And then we'll continue to do that, invite other schools who want to be a part of the MEAC community as well, which, you know, we have inquiries, but, you know, we want to make sure that we got our eight together and ready to roll as we continue. And we actually still have Florida A&M who has continued to be a part of our community. And we welcome, you know, all who want to continue to grow and as we continue to expand which games that we do. And the thing about it is we look to the students to ask what games you want to play. So it might not be Call of Duty that, you know, the major, but that's out there that leagues are playing. It could be Among Us. It could be, you know, it could be Rocket League is a big thing for us, or, you know, it's specific to what they want to play. So that's how we move. So, but I can't wait till we get to that piece that it's like we make that announcement that we are officially a varsity HBCU conference.
That is awesome. And it's a perfect segue because I was getting ready to ask you, there's some obvious challenges, COVID included, some of what you just mentioned too, small conference, eight schools. But how proud are you of the recent successes for the MEAC, including the growth and evolution of golf at Central and Howard and Morgan being featured during NBA All-Star Weekend, South Carolina State's victory in the Celebration Bowl. Just to name a few, there's also more pro football prospects coming from MEAC schools. Norfolk's been just representing for the MEAC in the NCAA tournament the past two seasons. How proud are you of the accomplishments in spite of just some ongoing difficulties, which is normal for a commissioner of any conference, not let alone the MEAC?
Right. It's a great time to be a part of the MEAC. You know, you know, it's strange because, you know, we've had, you know, the rumors of, you know, schools leaving or, you know, the MEAC should fold like a tent. I'm not going to say who said that, but, but, you know, it's a great time because of the athletic accomplishments that we've had in the conference. And if people begin to look at where we are, where we've been, how we continue to be successful despite institutions who have left, we're still moving, you know, and we'll continue to move because we have eight strong institutions, not only athletically, but academically. You know, we still have, because of our partnerships with the NFL, you have those opportunities for our students to get looked at. You know, the NFL has a special HBCU combine to ensure that our students are getting looked at. In addition to that, with the careers in the NFL of having students opportunity to find those jobs off the field and where they can grow. Golf, oh my gosh, you know, with Steph Curry, you know, getting and starting the program at Howard, what a tremendous success that is. And that's a tremendous legacy that he leaves behind. When you think about those, you know, people get on the HBCU train since, you know, with social injustice and unfortunately with George Floyd being murdered, you know, everybody wants to come and just throw money at HBCUs, but are you leaving a legacy that's going to continue? And Steph Curry definitely has done that. He can walk away and look, this is what he's left and it continues to go forward. And oh my gosh, the students are, they're so successful with that, with Gregory Odom Jr., you know.
Howard, yes.
So, you know, that's amazing. And then with Central, you know, Central started their golf program reinstated, I think, in 2000. And they are just like, boom, in the last couple of years, you know, and it's great, not only for the institutions, but it's great for the conference. As they continue to do well, the way they continue to brand the conference, as long as with their institutions, and puts a spotlight on, you can come to an HBCU and still get the recognition that you deserve regarding your talents and your skills. So yes, with the Celebration Bowl, South Carolina State doing well, Norfolk State, and by the way, when I was at ODU, my play place was Norfolk State. But anyways,
I love the way you say no. I love the way you say Norfolk.
Norfolk is my place. So, so yeah. So you know, great success. You know, when you looked at the run that it took to get to the Celebration Bowl, like during the season, I thought Norfolk State was going to get there. And it just speaks to the competition in the conference. It always has a strong competition in the conference, and will continue to do so. So, you know, with the continued success that our teams are doing, it just further solidifies what the strength of the conference is. We're a strong, athletic, competitive conference.
I just want to comment real quick. Wale, I know you got the next question for her, but we had Sam Perrier on our show, and he just glows about Gregory Odom. I mean, his name is just being elevated in the golf world, and I'm so excited for him and just HBCUs. Howard is like our adopted school, like I said, not just because where we're from, but just our partnership with them as we continue to highlight HBCUs on our show. So I'm just excited that you mentioned him, and yeah, keep pushing that, brother.
Absolutely. That's part of my vision is got to tell our story. Who knows better about our story than us? So we got to tell that story. And all this talent that we have, and it's not always centered around basketball and football. It's also within our Olympic sports. And so we have to continue to do that. And one of the things that we did for the first time in our history was to broadcast tennis, men's and women's tennis. Never has been done before. And to be able for their parents and their family and their friends to see them play is tremendous.
I love tennis. Ray knows that.
Okay. Yeah, we play. I wish we played at UMES. That's our biggest regret. Me too.
Had some free books.
Right.
Well, all right, the conference has made strides in sports such as we mentioned golf, bowling, and men's basketball. Yep. Does that change the level of focus on the sport of football, which is vital to many in many ways?
Absolutely not. As you know, with HBCUs, you know, the football and basketball, the revenue sports help support the whole athletic department. And so now, you know, we want to help elevate the other sports so that they're on an equal standing as basketball and football. Football is just another beast on its own. It will continue to be on the forefront of everything that we do, just because they're like, athletics in general is like the front porch to the university. And because football is more, I guess, widely acceptable, everybody wants to, you know, see football, they're always going to be that leader for conferences in general. So they will continue to do what they do and continue to shine a light on the conference and their institution. But when we just started last year, a countdown to kickoff, FCS, one of the first FCS pregame shows for football. But this gave us the opportunity not only to show football, but also to show the other sports. Like when we went to South Carolina State showcasing Judge Hargrave. Lord Jesus. That is not his name. Judge Hardeep, who has been their tennis program, men's and women, has been the strongest.
They have a great program.
Tennis program, right?
They do have a great program.
That gives us the opportunity to highlight what they're doing on their campus, you know, and it's different. And if football can allow us that opportunity to tell the stories of what's going on in the other sports, then that's what we want to do.
I agree. Absolutely. They have a great program. Yeah. I think Norfolk State has a good program too as well.
Norfolk State and Morgan State right up there with them as well. Yeah. So it's very competitive. So we want to show that. We definitely want to show that.
So you mentioned earlier your vision for the MEAC. Mm-hmm. What are, in your opinion, some of the biggest obstacles to achieving your vision?
Wow. I think one of the obstacles would be, I think the outside forces of not getting, I guess the perception of if you have institutions leaving your conference, that, you know, that the conference is weak, that the conference is about to fold. So you are constantly battling those type of perceptions to say that we are fine, you know, we're strong. And so that you don't have alumni or, you know, boards of trustees who become antsy because, oh my God, we have to leave because they left and we're fine. There's no reason to leave. And you have to look at those, when you look at that, doing your right research and actual vetting to see that the MEAC is a great place to be, you know, with our partnership with ESPN, you know, we're on a national platform and we'll continue to look at other opportunities that put us on other, you know, platforms that continue to help brand the institution. We're one of the only FCS conferences that give our institutions revenue distribution at the end of the academic year, you know. So we have revenue that's going back to our institutions, you know, whether that's through NCAA basketball money or through our corporate partnerships. You know, we reinvest in our conference, in our institutions, because of course we're lower resource institutions, and the fact that we are the conference has always been on a shared model, you know, what's good for one should be good for all, how we all can grow together. And so that's how we share in the revenue amongst the members. So, you know, academically, you know, we share in the same mission. You know, we have higher research institutions within the conference. And when you look at, you know, institutions who have left, they raise the academic profile of the conferences that went into. And so, you know, when you have to actually look at and vet, you know, why are you leaving? What's the real reason why are you leaving the conference? Because we're a great place to be. And so we'll continue to work on our strength, our values. We've just finished our strategic and long range plan. So we're all going towards a shared vision. Because I can have my own vision, but if we don't have a shared vision, we're not going anywhere. And so that's the most important, having the commitment of all 8 presidents and chancellors is tremendous. And the presidents and chancellors are very engaged. You know, we have Dr. Wilson, who serves on the Division I Board of Directors and the NCAA Board of Governors. We have Dr. Jay from Norfolk State, Dr. Javon Adams-Gaston, who served on the NCAA Constitutions Committee, as well as now currently serving on the Division I Transformation Committee, is where Division I is going to be. And then you talk about Dr. Wayne Frederick from Howard, who currently serves on the Knight Commission and who led the conference through COVID and, you know, spoke to Congress in regards to, you know, name, image, and likeness and its effects on HBCUs. And then Dr. Tony Allen, who serves on the Biden administration committees, you know, specifically. And then, you know, it's so much of how these presidents are really engaged in athletics and conferences and how we can stay strong together. And I am extremely honored that they believe in me to help move the conference forward. I'm humbled. But I'm excited because I have that support to be able to do what I need to do to help us all.
I appreciate the reassurance because everything you're saying is so relevant because of all the stories that float around. Well, uh-huh. You can attest. I posted on social media. I said, we got to save the MEAC just because everything I was hearing, like, you know, the MEAC can't be going away. We've been talking on, I don't know how many shows about how the MEAC could change, how it could grow. And I'm just thankful to hear that. That's all I wanted to tell you. I don't have any more questions for you, but we got to do a part two. That's all I would say.
You know, I'm glad you said that because what it disturbs me is that there are only 5 historically Black conferences. Why would you want one to go away? Why would we want to continue to try to pull down when there are only 2 Division I conferences? You know, what great way for the competition that we've had with the SWAC, the camaraderie, you know, and we continue to work together. We, you know, all us HBCU commissioners are working on ways that we can do things together because we need to take back the HBCU name, you know, take back, you know, the from third party promoters and everybody who wants to do something, but what can we do together that's going to benefit our institutions, bring back revenue to our institutions together? Because if one of us succeeds, we all succeed. And so what we don't want to do is to get watered down. You know, we have a rich historical culture, a legacy that we are here for a purpose. We started for a purpose to provide those opportunities for African Americans. And now we're so diverse for, you know, for all. Why would we want to tear down an a conference? You know, why everybody to come help and save HBCU conferences as a whole?
So true. So true. So I'm looking at this. I'm looking at the sign on the back of your wall. It says women supporting women.
Yes. Don't look at the trash right here. Cause I got my, Amazon. Right. So, you know,
and to me, you're a trailblazer. And so there's being the first to anything, you're a trailblazer. And I'm sure there's a young girl out there or a girl who's like, you know, in college or striving to be in this type of position. What would you tell that individual about, you know, how to achieve this goal and to do what you have done? You know what I mean? Because again, you're looked upon that person to me as inspiration. So you're inspirational. So what would you tell that young lady?
Thank you. I would say get comfortable with being uncomfortable. You have to continue to push yourself, get out there and network. I am an introvert, extrovert, I guess I could say. But, you know, in being in places where I have to have somebody with me in order to be able to function, you know, getting out of that mode of being able to get out there, introduce yourself, tell your story, which is important, is to be able to communicate what you want to do, where you want to go, because you never know who you're talking to and how they're connected. And that's how my career started. It was based on relationship and connections and being able to say, this is what I want. When I started out, I was the in grad school, and back then, I'm not gonna tell you back when, there weren't a lot of academic support programs in the area. So I was sitting at my internship at ODU and I was sending out letters to the various colleges in the area saying, I want to start your athletic academic support program. Dr. Thomas at Hampton he called me, and then we played phone tag, and he never called me again. And so I was like, oh. So I had to find, which is one thing I should have called again. But I was like, oh, what am I going to do? And a friend of mine in my class said, the dean of women is looking for an assistant. And I was like, all right, I'll give it a try. I want to interview with her. And it just so happened that her aunt used to babysit me.
Wow.
In a military family. And so I was like, so she hired me. And so loved the job. And her boss, the vice president of student affairs, asked me, how do you like the job? And I was like, oh, I love it. Because one thing you want to do is when you get in a job, you need to be where your feet are planted. Sure. Work that job and not be so you're in the job, but you're already working towards the next one. So you're not really giving it your all. And so I asked, I was like, oh, I love what I do. I said, but it's not what I want to do. What I want to do is start an athletic academic support program. It just so happened that he was the chair of the athletic certification committee who set up an interview for me to meet with Dr. Thomas. And then Dr. Thomas hired me to start the athletic academic.
Wow. God is good.
So when I say that, you have to be able to, one, have a good work ethic, work great at what you're doing currently, because people watch you. And then when you get that opportunity, tell people what you really want to do, where you want to go. And it's fortunate. I've been truly blessed because Dr. Thomas, when he left to become the commissioner of the MEAC, about 2 months later, he called and said, it's time for you to get paid for what you're worth. And so, and I'm like, yeah, because I was living with my sister. My favorite meal was romaine noodles and broccoli. Okay. So, and it was Greensboro. So that would have been the first time I ever left the area, left my family. And I said, he said, the only thing I got is compliance, director of compliance. And I was like, I don't even like compliance, but I'm coming. And so from there, I never asked for a raise. I never asked for a promotion. They just came because all I did was focus on getting the work done. And so that's how I moved up. The only thing that he asked me about the commission, I was like, no, but he could care less. But, you know, everything came. He consistently challenged me. So I never turned down a challenge. You know, it's easy to say, no, I'm not going to do this. And no, I don't want to do that. And that was part of the reason why he asked me to come. And there would be individuals from Hampton would say, hey, tell him I want to come work here as well. And he was saying, he's like, no, nah, I'm not going to bring them here because when I asked them to do something, they didn't want to do it. They were, you know, and people think that their job is a la carte. Well, I'm going to do this, but you got to pay me for this. But you forget about the last line in your job responsibilities that says other duties that's assigned. You know, nothing comes with extra money. It's either you want to do it to get better, to learn experience, because that's how you're going to move up. And so that's what I did, accepted the challenges as we move forward in my career. But you have to be able to say, this is what I want to do, keep focused, and get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Awesome.
That applies to so many things in life.
They got to take notes. I took notes, and I'm not a young female. That's what you asked for, right?
Yeah. We got to take notes for this for HBCU Corner, man. This is what it is. We got to do it for this, too.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
Well, like Ray said, we got to have a part two because you are a dope individual. Like,
oh,
we have
wow. Thank you. Thank you. I had a great time. So, you know, I love to laugh and anything where we have a great conversation, I'm open.
Well, we appreciate you. Thank you for being on HBCU Corner. Is there anything you would like to add before we let you go?
Wow. No, other than stay focused on the MEAC, support us. Help us move forward together. And look, if you got a suggestion, let me know.
Great.
All right.
Well, thank you so much for being on HBCU Corner and keep doing the great work.
Thank you. Thank you guys. Thank you so much. And you keep doing what you're doing.
Appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye. Ain't the MEAC commissioner dope? She's awesome. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, follow us
on Twitter at Urban Sports Scene, IG at Urban Sports Scene, and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Don't forget to subscribe to our Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, Empire Media, at empiremedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows, as well as other great content. Again, appreciate everybody for tuning in. We're going to do it again next week. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. A yiddig deuces. A mega. Do me a favor, brother. Lead us out, big homie.
Swag.